Hey everyone, today's show is the second part of the conversation with Eric Gunderson from the LeBron Wire. I'm talking about the Celtics series a little bit. We recorded this before that, but I talked about the Celtics series, talked about what could go wrong for the Cavs and what we're watching for going forward, as well as the possibility of some CJ McCollum trades, as Eric also hosts Locked On Blazers. The Cavs are obviously playing the Celtics. That series starts on Sunday, so go to fearthesword.com and check out our coverage there, and then stay tuned here. Jared Weiss from The Athletic will be previewing the show with me later this week, and then I'll have a mailbag show up tomorrow talking about the series. So drop those questions to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or to @lockedoncavs on Twitter. And it's going to be a really good series. I think we're going to learn some things about the Cavs, but funny that we're here after these two teams played on the opening night, played last year, and Kyrie and Gordon Hayward aren't even playing. But here's today's show, Eric Gunderson, and a whole bunch more coming in the next couple days. Thanks, guys.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Eric, so we left it off yesterday talking about Kyle Korver, talking about some of the, you meant the last thing you said that I think is a good place to pick up is the Cavs have good problems right now. And I think the one and feeding into that is they're going to come into the series no matter who they play. We're recording this on Tuesday, so just know that things could change. The series could be wrapped up before you hear this, but they're going to get time off for LeBron, time off for Kevin Love, time off for George Hill and his back, time off for Ty Lue, which I think we've already stopped talking about Ty Lue having to step away for his health, and that's like a little weird to me. Like that happened a month ago, like, and he's just back at it, and he's apparently sleeping more. Yeah, but yeah, he found out about Stan Van Gundy because he said he took a long nap pregame. I was like, Ty, I wish I could have taken a nap pregame. I would have really liked a 2-hour nap. It'd be great. Where the Cavs are at right now, did you expect them to have positive problems and things to decide or do? Is this surprising to you? Because for me, based on what we saw in the regular season and thinking, okay, LeBron's going to make a lot of this better, I was very concerned about what some of the things are going to figure out, because I just didn't know how capable they were. There was no data or film that was telling us this team's just going to figure it out and be fine and beat the Raptors in four games after slugging against the Pacers for seven.
Cavs in six before the series. I thought they were going to do this the other way around. I thought they were going to wipe the floor with the Pacers and then be in a fight with the Raptors, and I was exact opposite. And I did think that they would be better in the playoffs. The one thing I did not expect, I think, that has just been a huge game changer for them has been Tristan Thompson just being so good and just finding his form again. You could kind of see Ty Lue throughout that series kind of leaving the clues, I trust my guys. Tristan is one of those guys throughout the series, and then he plays in game seven, and then game one of the Toronto series completely changed the series, and it was because of Thompson. And obviously LeBron has been amazing, but Tristan, he really changed a lot for the Cavs, and I think that is really what created the good problems. The other one is JR and Kyle Korver, as of late, just making everything. Korver's been doing that all year though, and JR's been doing that for he's been getting better since in 2018. Like 2018, JR has been pretty good.
Yeah, he was really good defensively, even when he's been locked in defensively, even when he's not shooting well, he is making those shots. And I will say, as a team against Toronto, one of the most impressive things to me about those Cavs wins were how their role players moved off ball. Kyle Korver in game four, if you go back and watch the tape on that, he absolutely shredded Kyle Lowry off ball. Kyle Lowry was just getting worked, had no idea where to go. DeRozan had a lot of issues in the series. They were just getting the right mismatches, and I don't know.
Oh man, that Korver Love off ball screen is just, that was murder for the Raptors.
Yeah,
And, like, that starting lineup right now is just hard to defend. Like, they can run a simple pin-down action, and they're getting good looks. And they're screening in the right ways. And, like, it helps that, like, Kevin Love's a good screener. J.R. Smith is an underrated screen setter. Kyle Korver is a moves well off ball, is a good screen setter. LeBron is obviously LeBron. And George Hill fills in all these little gaps that if it's not a Kyrie type guy, George Hill's, in my mind, sort of like the type of point guard you want that's going to make right decisions, is going to know where to go, is going to help with the little stuff, and then make his open shots as well, and then push at the right time as he did in game four. I did not expect this. Like, I still have, you know, concerns, you know, maybe not against Boston, because I think Korver's probably going to be fine. And depending on how they match up and who Boston starts, or, you know, Philly, whatnot. But, you know, moving, I think, you know, the Houston series or a Golden State series, I think Korver could be an issue, a liability. I think that starting lineup could have to get altered to some degree because of it. But I also do think, like, they found something that works. And I don't, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they didn't in the regular season. But you're right. Like, it is, they've found these guys that are playing well at the right time. And you're right that Ty did drop these hints. He dropped the Tristan, and he dropped all these other notes that look like I'm going to trust my guys. And I don't think it's a mistake that it's four championship 16 guys. The four guys left, Kyle Korver, who's there last year, and George Hill, who has not been with this team before, but has been through, like you said on the yesterday show, has been through this ringer before with the Pacers, and was on a good Jazz team last year before signing with the Kings.
He had to secure, dude. He had to secure the bag.
Yeah, like good move, George Hill. Then you just tweet like angry emojis, and like you get traded, and you end up playing with LeBron. Like, it works out, but like they've backed into something that works, and it took some tinkering. It took like the Jeff Green starting experiment lasting one whole game in the playoffs, but they've found something that works for them and gives them like an identity that they can at least like build everything around of, and like that for a team that didn't have one for like the whole season. To me, is just like the biggest positive of what we've seen so far.
Totally. No, yeah, they have that. They have a real starting five now that they can count on. And then, you know, you throw Tristan in there. They have six guys that they can, that are just like, those are their six guys. You know, if two of the other guys could really just step up and be consistent, they'd have a really great 8-man rotation, which is what you really want when you're getting to the finals. And you know, like back to Lou dropping hints, you know, another one that he dropped all year long was, you know, Korver might start in the playoffs or might start later on in the season. And he tried to start him actually before he got hurt and the tragedy with his brother happened and all that stuff. And he was starting actually before all that happened. And I the biggest reason I think they didn't do that is because he's 36, you know, he's up there in years and, you know, just can't play that long. But now at the stage that we're at in the playoffs, that doesn't really matter anymore. You know, they're going to get 2 days rest at least 1 day rest in between games. They're going to have travel days. They're going to have way more time off. And right now, the rest for LeBron is crucial, but I think it's just as, you know, almost as big for Kyle Korver. You know, it's obviously not as big because LeBron is so much more important, but, you know, it's definitely big for Korver and a bunch of these guys because, you know, Hill has dealt with a bunch of injury injury things. The fact that they get time off is not only big for LeBron, but it's big for all the guys on this team that, you know, are up there in years. Jose Calderon, all these guys.
Jose Calderon, always ready, just always ready to go in. Like, he's always, him and Kendrick Perkins, just if you watch them on the bench, it's kind of incredible just how into it they are, even though, like, Kendrick's in a suit and Jose is just, like, maybe going to get in the game, but, like, probably not. When you look at round two and you look at the Cavs beating Toronto, aside from just the better matchup than against Toronto than Indiana for a couple different reasons, what about the Cavs' performance like was the biggest difference? Like, was there a player? Was there a tactical decision? Well, what about their second round series and like made them just look a lot more competent than they did in round one when they looked like a team that was kind of vulnerable than to, again, just looking like the class of the East after just thrashing the Raptors?
I mean, I think the easiest answer is Kevin Love making his shots, you know, and making better decisions out of the post and making better plays. Like, he was just a better player. You know, he got hurt in the Indiana series. And, you know, he struck, but he struggled too. You know, he said the hand wasn't really bothering him. And a lot of the shots, you know, he was missing his right-handed hook shot around the basket. He was missing basically everything. And then he also wasn't making good plays out of the post either when Indiana doubled. And then now, and then in game two, they just made the effort to get him going, get him going with Kyle Lowry on him, with DeRozan on him, working the dribble handoff with George Hill, working that off-ball screen with Kyle Korver. And then once he got going, the Raptors didn't have a chance. Like once Love, it was kind of, I just finished reading Jason Lloyd's book, and there's a part in there where he talks about when they moved Love to center in the Toronto series in 2016, and they just had no answer for it. It was basically the same thing. It's like once Love started getting going, it was impossible for them to stop. They just don't have the personnel to beat them. And I think that was the biggest thing, you know, aside from matchups. You know, I think it was just Kevin Love was better and is better than, you know, a bunch of the guys on the Raptors. Like LeBron's great, but Kevin Love was playing like an all-star finally.
That book, by the way, if listeners out there have not read that book, very, very good basketball book. A lot of really good nuggets on the last era of the Cavs. There's a really good Chris Grant story. There's some really good Chris Grant stories in there.
Oh man. I came away feeling so bad for Chris Grant.
He's at the Q. I work for the Spurs now, and he will randomly be scouting games at the Q. And I just wonder how weird that is for him.
Oh,
you know?
God.
You know, like, yeah. Trent Redden's been around as well, and, like, I, you know, he worked under David Griffin. I'm sure it's, like, a little weird for him, but, like, it has to be super weird for Chris Grant, like, more than anything, just because he took Bennett, how he got fired, everything, and he's working for the Spurs, obviously, so he's, like, doing fine, but...
Yeah, like, he took Bennett, he took Bennett when he didn't want to take Bennett.
Yeah, that's like one of the, and like that's one of the things of that book is like he did not want to take,
Yeah, no, anybody. I think that was written about.
In the lead up to the book release,
like that was something that was blogged about. So like if you look for that online, like you can find that online. Like, yeah. That's not like one of, but like it was pretty. I mean, still like reading the whole thing and how like getting all the way more context into that than just like the excerpt that people blogged about is really good, and you should check out the book and buy it.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Get the audiobook or read the actual book. Get the ebook, whatever. Just read it. Actually, if you go back in the archives, there's an interview with Jason Lloyd about that very book on this podcast, but.
Locked on Cavs, subscribe now.
Yeah, go do that on iTunes, but or wherever you get podcasts. I use Overcast. Overcast is great. But speaking of the book, there's a whole thing in there about how like Kevin Love basically like had to come to Cleveland. It was just like when like to get LeBron, there was just you're gonna go get Kevin Love. I understand like the argument that he does not uber elevate your team to like this high super high degree. Just because like what he does is just not, it's not, you know, KD, it's not just like at that level, but like you just see in that series, I think you're dead on to point out that like the biggest difference is just Kevin Love was very good. You know, obviously he didn't have like the best first game of that series, but the last three games of that series, unbelievable. Just looks more comfortable. His hand doesn't seem to be bothering quite as much. He's hitting threes. He's rebounding. He was a very good rim protector in game four. He was really blocking shots and defending the paint against Toronto in that game four win. He's been awesome, and I think as they go forward, like I think him at the five, obviously it's been a struggle for him to some degree. I look at the Boston series, I think he's gonna do fine there. Obviously, if we get to the Warriors four match, you know, obviously if Draymond starting at the five, that's gonna be tough for him. But I think Kevin Love, like it for the things that he's done that have not always been great with the Cavs, for some of the flack he's taken. I think that this series is just to be like, look, Kevin's has his limitations. He's not the, you know, the most athletic guy, and he certainly struggled in the first round, but he's really good. And when he's really good, the Cavs are just a heck of a lot better when he's playing like all-star Kevin Love. Like to quote LeBron, he's a big part of their success and a big part of their unsuccess and their non-success rather.
I mean, yeah, and he was all year. I mean, him and like the entire, like, I know that, you know, a bunch of the guys on the team, like Channing Frye had a lot of moments during that, like, 18 out of 19 streak, you know, way back when, feels like years ago. But I mean, it was basically him. It was basically Love and LeBron two-man game, like, the whole time. We mixed it with some Kyle Korver threes, like, and like, that's the recipe for this Cavs team. And for whatever you say about, you know, how it's not ideal, whatever. Like, that is, you're breaking news when people say that. That's like one of the criticisms about the Cavs that I like kind of bothers me. It's like, well, yes, obviously it's not ideal that Kyle Korver's like their third most important player, but like, it's just what it is. And so, but both of these guys are so good, and when they get going, can really change a game for you and win a game for you. And, you know, Love has struggled against Draymond, but, you know, I think he played pretty well in both of the games against the Warriors when they tried Jordan Bell, which I thought didn't really work for Golden State. If Kerr decides to go back to that in a theoretical rematch, I like Cleveland in that matchup. Obviously, like, I don't think I would pick them in the series, but I mean, when Love is good, Love is really, really good, and we saw that.
When we'll look at Ellis in the second round, was for me, it's George Hill is the other big thing, and just how aggressive he got, and how he's healthy, and how much that second ball handler really matters. I think he's going to get more and more important going forward. He's going to be big against Terry Rozier. He'd be big against chasing whoever off ball guy he'd see against Philly. He would obviously be very important defending either Chris Paul or Steph Curry. Any other guys that poked their head up in the second round that we haven't touched on that you kind of think are worth noting? I think Ty Lue deserves praise as well for a lot of what he did. Some little things I don't love, but I think he was pretty good in the second round as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, Ty Lue, Hill, I think maybe Hill and Love are maybe a little connected too, because they kind of have a little bit of a chemistry together. So maybe like them as kind of like a, because like LeBron with anybody is going to cause a problem on one side of the court, but if you have on the other side of the court as like your bailout action pick and roll with Hill and Love, you know, that's a really good place to go. And so I think obviously J.R. Green and J.R. Smith both played really well in that series, in the last series we just had. But J.R., I think he shot 77% from three in the four games. And that's just crazy. And he was hitting shots, you know, with guys in his face. You know, the shots that are, you know, when J.R.'s hitting them, that's when he has his confidence is up at the highest, when his cup is full. And he has that. And right now, I don't think you can ask for a better lineup than the one that they've got. The one that you said, you know, is kind of their identity now, is that you just have four guys around LeBron who can shoot. And in the defensive, I think both Korver, JR, or in all three, Korver, JR, and Love, you know, all of them have been pretty solid defensively. Like, they've all been in a pretty good spot. They've been fighting, and they've been really solid. And I think that's been a huge reason why they found some success. And, you know, whatever they can get, those have been the guys that have all delivered. You know, I think the guys that just haven't really shown up that we're kind of all waiting on is, you know, Clarkson and Hood, or maybe Jetty Osman, can provide a little something extra to kind of give them a full rotation. Cause I think, you know, they're not quite there yet.
To look ahead just a little bit, do you have concerns about, is there anything you have a concern about when you look at the next round, when you look at probably playing Boston, or anything the Cavs have done that you're thinking, okay, this is a weak spot, this is something they kind of need to course correct as they move forward and try to maximize this? I mean, they're just LeBron is just now talking about using the championship word, is saying championship and playing for a title. He's just now saying that, but to get there, what else do you think they need to figure out?
Well, I mean, I think they really need to figure out who their backup point guard is. You know, is it going to be Clarkson or is it going to be Calderon? I think at some point they're going to have to make a decision there, because that is a very important spot. And, you know, the Osman, Jeff Green, Rodney Hood, you know, triumvirate of, you know, meh you know, that whatever that kind of sorts itself out. I don't know if that's as important as, you know, who plays in that point guard spot to kind of help out LeBron and George Hill at times, because those guys, you know, obviously LeBron can play for however long, but, you know, Hill has a history of wearing down. And I think you got to be really careful about his minutes. And I think you have to figure out who's going to be that other guy coming off the bench handling the ball, because, you know, the ball handlers, you know, obviously there's a lot of really important aspects of the game, but I just think if they decide on who they're going to have there, then they can kind of build their second unit and maybe the rest of that kind of fit falls into place. I don't know. I think that backup point guard spot has to resolve itself somehow.
100% agree, because like the moments that the Cavs are going to win and lose games against bigger teams, or against better teams, excuse me, are in the moments where LeBron sits, and having a guy that can steady the offense and lead the offense in those moments is really going to matter. For me, I'm very curious to see how this starting five would handle a really athletic team. I don't know if it's built to handle a team that can not only can score and plays well, but is athletic, and that this is sort of like why I'm intrigued about Boston. Let me preface what I'm about to say with this. I do not think Boston beats the Cavs. I'm gonna pick the Cavs in that series that I assume we're gonna get as we record this in five games, right? If Philly gets through, like I'm still picking the Cavs at this point. I think both teams, more so Boston, just because of Stevens, because of the crispness of that team. I'm very intrigued to just see how the Cavs handle a team that moves so precisely, that has athletes at a lot of positions, that is gonna just be able to like have a guy that's more athletic than Kyle Korver and it not be a hiding spot for Korver, right? Like, you know, you can't hide. Like I kind of assume that if let's say Boston goes, you know, Scary Terry, some wing, let's say Ojeleye, Tatum, Brown, Horford as their starting five to go against Cleveland. You know, like maybe Korver's hiding on Ojeleye, maybe he's hiding on Jalen. I wonder if Boston, how Boston could exploit Jalen, if Jalen's good enough right now to do that.
They'll probably put Morris.
Yeah, right. Marcus Morris will go in that game.
Morris would probably be in there too.
And so like where are you hiding Kyle Korver in that series against these more athletic guys? Like, you know, frankly, like what does JR versus Jason Tatum look like? Right, like Jason Tatum's really good. Like, he's really good already. How does JR handle a guy who's a little smoother than maybe DeRozan? Certainly is a better 3-point shooter already than DeRozan is, and that's just a bigger, you know, bigger than Oladipo was. How does he handle that? How does does LeBron being able to play free safety off Morris open some things up? Like I just want to see what that looks like. I do not think Boston has a realistic chance of beating the Cavs without Hayward, without Kyrie, without whatever else they do this summer. But that what they have now, just in terms of the coaching, the athleticism, the sharpness of that defense, I'm just kind of intrigued by what that looks like against this Cavs team, because it's different than what they've seen so far. Like they'd handled Indiana, and fought through what they do. They beat at this Toronto team that was really relying on two guys and took those two guys out of that series, and then just had matchup advantages at like 3 out of 5 positions of the floor almost every time. Do they have that against Boston? It's probably close to it. But what does it look like when that team is just going to, I think, be a little crisper, and have just maybe a little bit more athleticism in certain spots?
I mean, I think it's a good question. I think they're definitely athletic. I think it's a good preview for, you know, what the Cavs are going to get in the finals, whether it's Golden State or Houston, you know, with a lot of guys that can switch. But, you know, I guess I'm just not as scared about, you know, where you hide Kyle Korver, because, okay, say you put JR on Tatum, you know, okay, make Jaylen Brown, you know, Jaylen Brown, you want to take Kyle Korver ISO, like, go for it. Like, make Jaylen Brown do that. You know what I mean?
The Cavs are definitely going to be comfortable with that.
I don't think it's that much of a concern for me. And I think Korver's better defensively than he gets credit for. I mean, I don't think he's that bad.
Certainly, like, not, like, I mean, Jalen's probably not good enough right now to just roast Korver one-on-one. I think that's, like, a very, very good point on your part, and that I probably am overstating that a little bit. And look, like, without, like, Terry Rozier's really good. The Cavs would, like, kill to have him as their backup instead of, instead of Jordan Clarkson. But I like George Hill is probably has the advantage in that matchup, and I don't think that's like a hot take. Like I think George Hill should have the advantage in that matchup. The Cavs are, and like look like Boston's like Jalen's gonna fight him. Marcus will get some time on him. I'm sure Horford's gonna defend him as well. They don't have anyone that can defend LeBron. And look, Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love have a playoff history of doing great against Al Horford. Just do. There's the meme out there of the my two dads with Al Horford as the child and Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson as the dads. Like that is a meme that the Cavs fans made at some point in the last couple of years, because they've just dominated him and that like that will be an advantage for him as well. And yeah, Al's been great this year, but like there's a track record in the playoffs of the Cavs in particular Kevin Love in particular Tristan Thompson the Cavs' two main centers. They have a really good history against Al Horford, and that I don't think we can discount that. I think like that playoff history, even if the context is a little bit different, does have to matter to some degree.
Yeah, I mean he's absolutely sunned Joel Embiid in this series, but yeah, I think it's a little bit different when you're talking about not only guys that have a history, but just guys that have experience. Like, you know, Embiid's great, but he's not. This is his first rodeo. You know, I think what he's in playoff game number what seven? Like he just finished like his seventh career playoff game. Like, come on. Like, I mean, it's great that Al Horford and I love Joel Embiid, but like, you know, this is what the playoffs are about. And that's why there are cliches about them, because like stuff like experience and all those cliches that all these coaches and players repeat all the time. You know, this is the time of year where all that stuff comes true.
Eric, we'll wrap it up on this. Anything else you're looking for the rest of this Cavs playoffs as they push towards what looks like a likely fourth finals appearance? What else are you looking for at this Cavs team? I'll just say for me, what does Ty Lue keep playing some of these lineups where there's not a lot of shooting, where it's, you know, Green and Thompson together? Does he get a little bit more shooty with some of the lineup choices that he makes? That to me is sort of the one little thing that I'm looking for in the next round, regardless of who they play. But what are you looking out for?
You know, I'm looking out to see if there's any signs of life from Rodney Hood. I think, you know, I've always really liked him. When he was, you know, I got to see him a lot, you know, being that he was in the same division as the Blazers, and would watch him a lot and really liked him as a pick and roll player, really liked the way that he could attack, really, you know, thought that he was a pretty good decision maker. And just to see that he hasn't been a good decision maker, secondary ball handler, and even just a spot up shooter at times with LeBron, you know, has been a bummer. But if they can get anything resembling, I think, what, you know, he has done in his career, that opens up so many more things. You know, that opens up, you could go super big with LeBron, Hood, Korver, JR, and Love or something, or you could go super small and go LeBron at the five with Hood and Korver, JR, and George Hill. You know, you could, if Hood was playing well, that would open up so many more things. Cause I don't think anyone has to worry about Kevin Love anymore. I think Tristan Thompson's fine. Whatever Clarkson gets you, whatever, you know, I think him and Calderon, you could basically switch that, whatever, you know, whoever stands out. But I think if Hood brings up his level of play, you know, then you're talking like, okay, you know, maybe you start thinking bigger than like just getting to the finals if Hood can be good. But it remains to be seen whether he can do that. You know, the idealized version basically is what I'm talking about.
If he could just provide like some consistent scoring, I really, really like that. I'd feel better about that bench unit. Like, and if we're recording this, the Pelicans are playing the Warriors. And like people that have followed me for a long time will like probably get annoyed with me for saying this, but like Quinn Cook would have been like the perfect backup point guard for a lot of what they need. Like, he just like does all the smart things. He's not a great player, but he's just solid. And the Cavs have like had that guy on their roster a couple of times. And I just like, then I watched Jordan Clarkson like ignore, like look off LeBron James and like attack the rim. And I'm just like, okay, like they need something that just keeps the ball humming. It's like, why Jose Calderon has been good, is just like, or useful to them, is because like they just needed that guy that can keep things humming a little bit. But Eric, second part of this pod, thank you so much for doing this. Just real quick, give everyone a plug on everything you have going on right now, basketball wise, and especially LeBron Wire.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, being that the, you know, LeBron and the Cavs are doing their thing, I'm doing a lot of stuff over at LeBron Wire. Doing, you know, I like doing these kind of a little bit more detailed game previews. So I've been doing a lot of those. We also have, you know, coverage of everything LeBron, and lots of also, you know, just Cavs stuff, over at LeBron Wire, and then also Locked On Blazers, Locked On Blazers podcast. Definitely check that out. Blazers are obviously not in the playoffs anymore, but going to be doing some more season review type stuff and talking about, you know, what's going on with them, what they can do this offseason. But right now it's mostly LeBron, mostly Cavs. So yeah, definitely check out LeBron Wire, and obviously also listen to Lockdown Cavs with you.
Real quick though, CJ Miles, is he, or sorry, CJ Miles, CJ McCollum, just thinking about the Raptors too much. What's it gonna take to get CJ out of Portland and into Cleveland, where he can like go to Browns games, because he, for some reason, is a Massachusetts and likes the Browns.
Well, he's from Ohio.
I know, but like, it's just not mentally like an intelligent decision for anyone to root for the Browns. Just a bad idea.
Okay. You know, I think it's gonna take. You know, I think it's gonna take a lot. I just don't. Here's the thing with the Blazers, and I think, in a lot of ways, they're kind of in a similar spot as the Raptors are, in my opinion, is that, you know, the Raptors, I think, are in a little better spot. But, you know, for Portland, you know, they have two guys that are stars. They obviously didn't play well. You know, Dame had a really rough playoff, and they didn't play very well. They played awful against the Pelicans, and obviously the instinct that everyone has is to break up Dame and CJ, but like, they have two guys, they've played well in the playoffs before. This was a bad year, I think, and Anthony Davis was just so dominant. And I don't know what trading CJ gets them, like, unless there's another, you know, star caliber player involved. I don't think that they're in a better place, and it's the unsexy answer, which is kind of my take, is that I don't know if there's going to be a big trade that gets CJ out, and I think they kind of just have to run it back and, you know, hope for their growth to get better, and maybe that their bad contracts aren't so bad, because they kind of, they're in a corner, you know, with their cap. Yeah, they're just pretty screwed. So it's not really that fun to talk about, but like, it's just what it is, I think, at this point with them.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. I think if you're looking at the purely speculative, I think CJ is 100% going to be on any speculative list of, if LeBron says he's going to stay and they try to do something with that Nets pick, wherever it ends up, which is a week, I think, a little over a week from today as we record this. The draft lottery, which is somehow already here. I think CJ is on any hypothetical mock list, but yeah, maybe it just doesn't make sense for, like, why? Like, why just blow it up to blow it up?
So what would you do? Would you do Kevin Love and the Brooklyn pick for CJ?
Oh, is that, so is it sliding in number eight? Like, is it?
I mean, as it stands now.
I mean, I feel like you got to think about it, but it's like that, like, for what we know Kevin Love has done, for what we know he is, the hole it sort of leaves you. You're playing, you know, I mean, you're kind of stuck playing Hill and him now, you know? Like, it's not like you, like, have an easy way to replace what Kevin Love does up front either. I mean, I think you probably do, but, like, it also depends on what else you can do, right? Like, July 29th for me starts free agency, just because it's this, the LeBron and Paul George have the same option pickup date. Like, they're going to kickstart this. And everyone that's, like, much more in tap in the league than me keeps saying this is going to be a crazy summer. Like, every time I listen, I swear I listen to a podcast, like, with Lowe or someone that's like, this is going to be a crazy summer. And I feel like that starts with that option date. And it starts with, like, look, if the Cavs, like, get the number one pick somehow again, like, there's the doomsday lottery scenario for, like, if that happens, Twitter just implodes. that number one pick's gonna like if some team's like, yeah, I'll give you like I mean, if Portland got the number one pick and it was like, okay, you give up, if the Cavs got the number one pick or like a top three pick, let's say, like, would that be enough straight up for CJ? Like, you get to pick like Doncic, one of Doncic, Ayton, or whoever you really like in the top of the draft, and is that enough for CJ?
Man, I don't know. Because I think, you know, they're really sold on CJ, not only CJ, but how him and Dame play off each other and really have a connection on the court and off the court. I think that's something that really matters to them. But, I mean, damn, that would be tough to pass up, especially with their cap situation. If they could also, like, if they could throw in Myers Leonard, would you do that?
And like, yeah, I would do it. I would probably do it. You get Zizic like back.
Something like that to help the Blazers cap situation.
Yeah, like, I would do that.
Open up some cap space. Like, that's the way I would. And then that way they could also be players in free agency. Like that would, you know, but I mean, cause you know, CJ makes a bunch of money. I mean, I like Dame and CJ together, but maybe they think about it. I don't know, though. The problem is that I just don't think – I don't think Dame – when I start thinking about it, you know, it, from, like, the practical perspective, I just don't know how Olshay sells that to Dame as, like, this is a good move.
That's my big thing. It's like, how do you sell this to Dame?
So to me, like, that's where it stops, and that's where it becomes – it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Eric Gunderson. Find him on Twitter @Eric_Gunderson. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.